I'm Dr. Drew. A couple years ago, my wife, Susan, encouraged me to get screened for prostate cancer.
I even made the appointment for him.
And so I went, and they found out I did have prostate cancer, and we had caught it in time.
We were lucky.
Yeah, men, don't put it off like I did. Get it checked.
And ladies, even if you're married to a doctor, men are men. Go with your instincts. Help them take the first step.
And for more information, visit the Prostate Cancer Foundation at pcf.org.
His health depends on it.
Buying a car can be a stressful experience, but TrueCar is changing car buying forever. Yes, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free, guaranteed savings. Some features not available in all states. In the first 3 months of this year, over 126,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. TrueCar users save an average of $3,078 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three steps. Go to TrueCar.com, find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for, then register at TrueCar.com to see the upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. And the third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Every day, TrueCar.com users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
This is Corolla Digital. Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Get it on. Gotta get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. Am I sounding more like him? A little bit? Adam not here. Adam busy. Adam's got some litigation to deal with. Adam's got a couple movies to deal with. Adam's got some mangria to sell. So he abandoned me, and I thought, all right, well, what the fuck? This is my chance to invite in my favorite people. Immediately, Lavelle Crawford came to mind for me. Lavelle, welcome back.
Thank you, Doc.
It's a pleasure to have you. So Lavelle's going to bail us out here and create a real show out of this, so it's not just me dragging on. So let me just give Lavelle a little proper intro here in case people aren't familiar with you. They will be when I describe you.
Right.
I know Lavelle as one of my favorite stand-ups. I think I first saw you in Last Comic Standing, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Lavelle, L-A-V-E-L-L, Crawford, C-R-E-W-F-O-R-D.net is his website. You can get all the stand-up dates there. I recommend it. His Twitter handle is at Lavelle, the comic, right?
Right. Yeah. That's right.
Maybe that's right.
You're right.
And you undoubtedly know him as Huel, right? Is that the kid's guy's name?
Yeah.
Huel.
Yeah, you got the facts now.
All right. Huel who falls on a bunch of money. that's the moment that you'll all know.
Well, I laid on it.
Laid on the money.
Because we were supposed to transport it, so I didn't want to leave no back prints on it. I just left my cologne in the money.
You and Bill Burr, right? Was Bill Burr the other one?
Yeah, Bill.
I just remember you mostly.
I peer pressured Bill into laying down on it. He didn't want to at first, but I brought him into my dark world.
So Lavelle was the Saul Goodman, which played, of course, by Bob Odenkirk's bodyguard on Breaking Bad. Saul Goodman is the attorney for Walter White. And Lavelle was the bodyguard, the big bodyguard.
Right.
And Bill Burr was Bill Burr bodyguard too, or just sort of?
He was
henchman?
More like the, I guess you could say the con man.
Yeah,
the con
man, like a henchman.
He would get the motivation out of the people. I come in and get the motivation.
Really get the motivation.
The machine going. Excuse me.
All right. So now my question to you, Lavelle, is. Better Call Saul is the new spinoff that Bob Odenkirk's doing off of the Breaking Bad success. Are you going to be in that?
Man, I hope so. They didn't change it up. They did it. They're going to make it a prequel, and then a present, and then a afterward. So hopefully I'm going to get in there somewhere. I think they tried to make it happen.
Same writers?
Well, the creator of it, I believe, he's in it, and also You know, Mr. Vince Gilligan has a lot of input since it was his award-winning show.
His baby. Did you interact with him much?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We talked a lot, man. He was such a friendly guy. You know, it was strange enough. He had the personality of Mr. Rogers and probably the dark side of, you know, what's his name? John Wayne Gacy or something.
Oh my God.
He was that. You could tell that he was kind of, you know, he got a maniacal way about, oh, we're all happy here, but I will chop off your toes if you don't have my cash.
Oh, wow.
But I mean, but you'll never see that, you know. And so I guess that's inside him. Like Stephen King, you look at Stephen King, this guy ain't making no scary movies, but then he makes these weird movies where baby chopping off their parents' feet. It's interesting.
And it's almost a fetish kind of guy. Like, you know, those are the guys doing the weird ass sexual stuff.
Pretty much. Because, like, thugs, you know, they'll kill somebody. You know, I shoot you in your face, you creep up.
You know what you're dealing with.
Right, yeah. You know, but, you know, something like that Dexterish kind of mentality where he wraps you up in saran wrap and he cuts you with a sterile, you know, little bitty piece of suture. He has sutures and he has the scalpel and he's cutting you up in nice little pieces and then serving you.
Was Vince the kind of guy that would come up to you and go and sort of talk to you, get information from you about your character, or would he tell you about the character, kind of, you know what I mean? Would you collaborate?
In and out. I think that I handled mine so well that I didn't really need any input. He said, you know, I feel.
But would he say, I'm thinking about doing this with the character? Does it work for you? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Whatever he put on paper, I think he is smart enough to know who he's writing for. That's the incredible thing.
Yeah.
Because everybody in there, I don't think he had to really come and tell them anything. I think he respected their talent.
Yeah.
Enough where he just, you know, let you flow. And I think that's how it all went. Because I never had him come and say, hey, Lavelle, I want you to do it like this. He might come and talk, but I think more of the maniacal things, like the killer things, I think he may have talked to them more. But like me, you know, it was like, you know, he wanted to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
He wanted to keep it open and honest, you know, so I think that's where it worked out.
However you do it, that's how it's going to work.
Yeah, exactly.
And what are you up to now these days? You on stand-up tour?
Well, yeah, I'm doing stand-up. I was just in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I'm glad to be out of there. I mean,
why? It's nice down there.
Yeah, it's nice, you know. Yeah, that's coming from a white man, you know. It's always nice for white folks down in Knoxville.
Is that right? Is the South still too? I thought Tennessee was kind of coming around a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's not racist, but it's racist.
The history's there.
Yeah. And I think it wasn't really the racism, don't get me wrong. It was the club. I think that they stuck in 1975. I mean, they haven't remodeled the place. They got window air conditioners, and they didn't have air conditioning in the room, and they didn't even try to put the advertising. Like, you got, you know, an urban comic. I'm an urban and national comic.
Was it a mostly white audience or mostly?
Primarily, which is cool because I, you know, I got a lot of white fans, and don't get me wrong, I love everybody.
No, I know you're very.
Yeah. But I want it to be packed, though. I don't if it's packed with white folks, it's fine. If it's packed with black folks,
you're green folk are fine with you.
Sure, aliens. I don't care. I don't care. Smurfs. Packed with Smurfs. I don't care. But if you got the room half empty because you're afraid, you know, you don't want to pay for security, that just makes me mad. Because I didn't see Billy Bob them tear up a club and folk. I didn't see some good old boys wreck a room, Jack.
Yeah. You know, so you were worried about that.
Nah, I wasn't afraid about that. I just wanted them sitting in the seats. I didn't care.
Okay, you didn't care.
I mean, because I think when people come, you funny people, you come there, they gonna laugh.
Yeah.
And I'm not afraid. I've never been afraid of no heckler coming up.
Let me give some data about where you can be seen. You're at Southern Heritage Classic Comedy Show in Memphis coming up.
Right.
Then Stand Up Live in Phoenix.
Right.
And all dates on the website
lavellecrawford.net. DC this weekend. I mean, DC is all sold out.
Where's it going to be?
It's at the DC Improv.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, they sold out. Added the show. It sold out.
Are you anywhere else this weekend up in the East, or just all DC?
Oh, just all DC Improv.
I got to go to New York and then Boston this weekend. If you were in Boston, I would come.
I'm not in Boston. Mm-hmm. Boston is a weird comedy town because they don't have just a set comedy club. They have one date here, and then they had this little theater they do.
The theaters, yeah. The Wilbur, that was called?
Yeah, the Wilbur, yeah. And then they had Chicopee.
Carole and I did that Wilbur. It was nice. It was a nice theater. Yeah.
It was a nice theater.
And nice crowd and everything. Really mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah. All Bostonians are good folk, man. Yeah. You know, they fill you up with chowder, and you get a lot of crabs, and you can eat wrong in them cities, man. You can eat real bad.
Well, eat bad for yourself.
Yeah, bad for your health. I mean, it's delicious, but you can eat bad.
Well, let's talk a little about the South. My son's down there going to college, and he complains about the tone of racism. It bothers him, and I try to get him to
in
Tennessee.
Okay,
and I tried to get him to be more specific, and he had trouble.
Your son black?
No, but stuff bugs him. You know, he's a little unclear where it's coming from. It's just sort of in the vapors. It's sort of in the history and stuff.
And then I want to apologize to Tennessee because I'm not going to say that it's a racist state.
And by the way, Tennessee is a vibrant state. Man. People think it's a backward state. No way, man.
Well, when it comes down to curriculum and people's choices of careers, I mean, these young guys working as a waiter, he's studying nuclear physics.
No, it's Knoxville is a lot.
No, it's not
go
no
to
joke.
Nashville. Nashville's like a little Las Vegas. Right?
Yeah, I know. It's big. It's big. It's not. Yeah. It's not as country as people try to put it into that aspect. Because you got UT right there, great school
in Knoxville.
Yes, in Knoxville
and Vanderbilt and Nashville.
Yeah.
And what's the music school? What the hell's the other? There's a big. Oh crap! They're going to kill me for not mentioning this school. I can't remember the name of it. It's another big school, a couple of big schools in Nashville.
Well, you got Tennessee Tech, you got Vanderbilt, you got Fisk.
Yeah.
You know, you got some great schools down that way. And, you know, but not as far as racism, it's racism everywhere, like my hometown, St. Louis. I mean, you think about it. So you look at that aspect.
That's Ferguson.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got all that area. You know, that area is going through it, but I mean, it's just been there. But I don't think it was really racism. I think that the black folks, you know, black people will separate they self as well.
I know.
Because they on the east side of Knoxville, and where we was on the other side, and I was joking, saying thank you, for black folks, for taking the chance to come over here. I know you had to do a lot of alterations to get over here to look and make sure your license was valid, your insurance was up to date, all your headlights were working.
What about the cop thing? Talk to me about that. I don't understand it. Because the Ferguson got me thinking about it all again.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to talk about the fact that I had, let me tell you my story. So I've had two bad interactions with cops.
Okay.
And both times they were African American cops. And they were bad. They were terrible interactions. One was when I was like 15, it was the Rose Parade in Pasadena. It was a lot of crowd, guys doing the big crowd. And he goes, clear the street. And I under my breath, I'm 15 years old. I'm walking with other 15 year olds. I go, he probably means the sidewalk. Guy grabs me, lifts me off the ground, and starts shaking and screaming at me.
What?
I said, who the fuck are you to say? And I was like, and I just sort of paralyzed and then walked away stunned. Then I had another one where, again, Rose Parade event, where I was trying to cross the street with my car after the parade was gone. They had barriers everywhere. And these guys sort of waved me through the barrier, opened the barrier up. I was going in a driveway right across, and they could see where I was going. So I was pointing to it. And as I was practically in the middle of the street, an African-American female cop started pounding on my car and screaming, get out of the street. And I was like, I'm going out of the street. So I just kept pulling forward. She had me go to court for disobeying an officer.
Really?
And then got in court and told a bizarre story about how I careened off cars and nearly bit people. So anyway, but at no
point. On two wheels and went through a fiery hoop.
Right. But here's the interesting thing about my story. I was thinking about in the shower during the Ferguson thing. I was trying to get my head around it. I thought, I didn't walk away at any point and go, oh, African-American cops are bad.
Right.
I didn't think anything about anybody except that those two cops sort of mistreated me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'd always been raised with respect the police, they're your friends, that kind of stuff. And I wondered if the way the messages we give African-American kids about watch out for the cops, they want to kill you, if somebody had told me that when that cop picked me up, I think I would have triggered. I would have fought for my life. I would have grabbed his gun. You know what I mean? I would have thought the guy was going to kill me.
Exactly.
If somebody had been putting that in my head, do we have a problem with what we're teaching, or is it just the fact that cops do, which they do, we know they do single out African American kids?
Yeah.
Is it both? Should we be teaching?
Well,
kids?
Let me just get what I'm saying,
right?
I know exactly what you're saying. Sure. I'm gonna just say one experience I had when I was a little kid. My granddaddy.
They mistreat you. They do. Yeah. I know that. But I was mistreated too. You know what I mean?
No. I've been saying when I was a little kid, this wasn't even a mistreatment. Yeah. My granddaddy's car stopped on him. And the officers gave us a ride. Now, they
made us ride. You're how old?
Huh?
You're like 5 years old or something?
I was about 11.
Yeah.
They gave us a ride, you know, to the tow truck area or the garage.
And these are at white or African?
Oh, they're white. They're white. You know, so we, you know, I was kind of excited, you know, get to sit in the police car.
Yeah.
But they made me sit, me and my grandfather sit in the back seat. But if you ever rode in the cop car?
Well, that's what they make you everybody do, though, right?
Yeah, but I mean, these were
with the chain, the gate,
yeah. And it wasn't like a normal car. And then you had to sit up straight. You ever see that?
Yeah.
It was the worst ever. I mean, I was a little kid, but my knees were.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking a grown man must be in pain when he get in that cop car.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking like, man, this sucks.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it, and I was just like, you know, but I was a little kid then. Then I got old. I said, did he put that me in there to teach me? Yeah, boy. You know, one of these days you might have to ride in
here. Well, maybe not. Maybe just give you a ride to the
car. Right. But no, I didn't take it away. I'm not that kind of person.
I don't see you having any trouble with anybody, even if they mistreat. You know what I mean? You and I would both just go, oh, well, that guy's an asshole. That'd be it.
Right. It ain't no hold. I mean, but I think another time I was in Kentucky, in Cincinnati, in Newport, Kentucky. I was doing a funny ball. And me and my road manager, we have a volatile relationship. I ain't never had an employee where I argue with him and I pay him a lovely amount of money. And we have arguments about things because he wants to, how your entourage things start be thinking that they're stars just like you.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's got guests and he wants to walk them to the car. He didn't tell me. I'm tired. I'm ready to go. I'm a little hostile, but I'm like, hey, I'm just sitting there. You know, my energy was down. I wasn't feeling good. And I was ready to go. But he goes off and walks these chicks across. I said, man, this ain't no time for you to go get you some ass. You supposed to be getting me back to the hotel. Where the hell are you?
How old is he?
He's about 3 years younger than me. Ooh. You know, so we he's like my little brother, man. And I mean, he go, hey, man, fuck that. And he hung up the phone, right?
Wow.
He hung up on me. I said, this son of a bitch. I said, fuck him. He going to just sit here. I'm finna get in the car. I got the valet. They gave me the key. I mean, I'm Lavelle Crawford. They're not going to deny me anything. I'm just letting you take the reins because, you know, you're working
his job, yeah.
Right. But you don't want to do your job. So the opening act and me get in the car, we getting ready to go.
Can you see who the opening act was?
Spike Davis. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was my friend, you know. It was like Spike. And I said, what did I say to him? It was something. But it must have triggered something because he had turned into a bull, right? Then I said, he said, oh, yeah. I said, well, why you ain't ride with your friends? You know, since you want to work tonight, why you ride with your friends? He said, Lavelle, I don't want to hear it right now. I said, well, fuck you then. Take your broke ass home. So, you know, brother, you know, we're going at it. So next thing you know, he gets out of the car, and I said, all right, and don't bring you're fired. That's what I said, you fired. So next thing you know, he said, what? And he charges the car. I mean, he comes back at the car, and I'm like,
in his car or just
no, it's a rental car. No, yeah. He just come walking. He walking, coming back, running with full speed. I said, is he coming? I'm looking at Spike. I said, he want to go do this? I said, cool, because I'm in a mood. So I got out. I'm ready to go grizzly bear. He knew that if he let me out that car, it's gonna be bad for both of us. But the strange thing we were just up there earlier the day. Up there at the comedy show before the show started, laughing at these young black kids, how they was walking around, and then they seen the police, and they hit a U-turn, and the police that area right there, not just for the blacks, but it just seemed that way because the young kids, all of them kind of, you know, they got to keep them in order because it's like bars and stuff around there. So anyway, we laughing at them. Oh, they ain't want the police mess with them. We laughing. So lo and behold, when we got in this altercation, he comes at the car before I can get out fast enough because I had a seatbelt on. I got a seatbelt. I'm jumping out of the car, and he slams it, and it hits me in the lip.
He jumped into the car?
Yeah, he jumps at the door, so I couldn't get out. He was just trying to hold me, and it hits my lip. So that's when I just threw the door open, and I'm going at him. I'm going full swing. I got on my suit. I dressed in suits. I'm trying to knock him out, right? And the police, they were right there, and we was wondering why them little black kids took a U-turn, because it was down there, a whole police station standing there looking at us like, stop it. Stop it right now. And I look back, and I guess good God gave me that man's here that, hey, look, about 14 cops back here. That's calmed down. It's a bad black situation. And they seen two big brothers going at it. He said, stop. So I stopped. He said, Mr. Crawford, stand back. Because he thought, he didn't know he was working for me. He thought he was attacking me.
Wow. So they were going to help you.
So yeah, yeah. So it made me step back. And he said, we cool, officer. We cool. He said, no, you're not. Come back here. We cool. And next thing you know, he had his black thing. And I thought
Taser.
It was a, yeah, I thought it was a regular gun. I was like, oh, shit, they going to shoot him for this. I said, hold up, officer. He said, stand out of the way, Mr. Crawford. He's cool. We cool. He's, stand out of the way. Next thing you know, he said, hit him with it, Anderson. And he hit him. And it flew off that coil, and it hit him. And I'm going to tell you, when you see somebody get tased, it gets your mind right. My ass cheeks clean stuff so tight. If I was to take a dump, my turd would come out the size of dimes. I'm going to tell you right now, thin as dimes. I was so scared. And they hit him right, and it was all like, ah! And I was kind of happy, but I was scared at the same time. Like, yeah, that's what you get. Oh, God, I hope they don't kill him. And I said, fall, fool, and he wouldn't fall. He would not fall. And I was like, what
Maybe
the
Maybe he couldn't because they freeze sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, sometimes. Yeah. He said, hit him with the other one, Anderson. Oh. And they hit him with, like, he had about 2 million votes flying
then
through
he
his
fell.
Oh, he felt like a bad laundry, man.
Did they arrest him?
Yeah, he had to go to jail and everything.
No.
But the thing about him, he's not focused. You know, that's why I'm taking. Oh, he got him focused real good. Because that's why his golf game sucks, because he's not focused. I said, you need to take a martial arts class, because that's what I'm taking so I can get more focused. Because he had weed on him. See, you getting smart with me.
No.
And you had weed, but he didn't have it on. He had, luckily, he wanted me to come home and dig in his pocket. I'm saying, I'm not digging in your pocket with 2 million votes going through your ass. I'm going to electrify. Right, with the cops there too? Really? I'm going to just worship my
situation.
Right. Let me hold this weed off. Let
it's
me get it.
Tennessee, too.
Let me
not
get
in Colorado.
Right. This was Cincinnati. This was, you know, they got a curfew for black folks. Anyway, it was like across the street. Kentucky and Cincinnati, neither state, Ohio or Kentucky, was a great place to be. So he's shaking on the ground, and I'm like, oh, man, this fucked up. And I felt bad. I said, you arrest him? He said, hell yeah, we arrest him like that. And I was like, oh, man. I felt bad after that. But I'll tell you, I said, that tasing changed my whole life. I calm down. When I see police, I get real quiet. I don't want none of that electricity in my ass. I'd rather be in my house and going through my light bulbs than going through me, because that electricity got him straight.
It reminds me of, did you guys hear the story ever that Fletcher told about when he allegedly stole the tram at Universal Studios? He's during the K-Rock Weenie Roast, he stole a tram. You know, in the middle of the night, he just grabbed his tram, started driving around the back lot. And he, at some point, the thing ran out of steam or something, and some guy came back down with a truck, and it's old man in a truck, and the guy's, oh, I'll give you guys a ride back. And guy starts driving them towards the, like, police station, and he's like, what are you doing, man? Fletcher beats that guy up.
What?
And runs out, runs into the, allegedly, and runs into the War of the Worlds thing, where the airplane fuselage is, and he hides in there, and, like, 40 sheriffs come surround him.
And 40 sheriffs.
Yeah, and he said that he finally came out with his hands up. He's wasted, of course.
Right.
It's Fletcher from Pennywise, everybody. He's told this story many times on Loveline. And Mike Cather was there, my partner on Loveline.
Okay.
And he said that this yoked-out Asian sheriff put his taser, like there's a red dot you can aim it with, on his genitals. He goes, dude, I'm going to fry your dick off. And then starts screaming at him, lay down or I'm going to fry your dick off. Can you imagine that?
Man, hell no. Let me tell you
the red dot is right on his genitals.
Like, yeah, I was thinking about getting a vasectomy because I ain't want no more kids, but I don't want to fry up my sperm. I don't want my
sperm be okay. I'm going to take care of things, but fry your penis off.
Oh,
so good.
Yeah, either one. I don't want my penis looking up at me looking like a burnt victim. Man, that would be horrible.
How many kids you have?
I got one biologically, but I mean, me and my wife, we just, to an age where we don't need
Is that he or she?
Yeah, it's a boy.
She, right? Boy, how's he?
He's three.
Oh, you just keep going. That's fun.
Yeah, he's great though. He's in jiu-jitsu class.
Things still good with your wife?
No, we good, man. You know, it's black love, man. We have our moments, and my wife, you know, she's a good looking woman, so she likes to start fights with me. You know, it's just what
There's
it
a lot
is.
Packed into that statement.
Yeah. You know, we go. It's a weird thing. You know, I think when she's mad about something else, she'll get mad at me.
Of course,
because she's gonna tell me about something going on with one of our kids. And when we got home, I said, "Oh, Coach, that's why you were mad at me that night. You wanted to talk to me about this,
right.
But I wasn't around because I was working.
Right?
You know, but
where were you when I needed you?
Yeah, you know, you passed the whole. You know, statutes of limitations. I mean, y'all have y'all fight, but it ain't, ain't nobody in the house too much no more.
How long you guys been together?
Going on 6 years.
Good.
Well, it's going on 11 years. We've been dating for a minute.
Yeah, so it's good. So yeah. Where are you guys going? You're going nowhere, right? Standing.
Man, I'm not trying to go nowhere. Sometimes, because my whole thing is you talk that crap, and I see guys that are divorced, they look stupid. You know what I mean? They don't look happy.
No.
They don't look happy. I mean, and a lot of guys that'll be out there in the world, they go out there floating around a little bit. Oh, no. Oh, let me get back home to my wife. You know, they don't, you know. Once you get married, you know, single life is fun, but I didn't change my eating habits. I don't eat cheese. I don't eat pork. I think if I didn't have it, I would die.
You'd kill yourself with food.
Yeah, I would. I would be able to enjoy everything. Potato skins, because, you know, like Friday. What is Friday's got endless apps now. They got endless apps. You know, they ain't changed their seating, though. They got booths.
Do you see a doctor regularly? Do you have high blood pressure or anything?
Well, you know, I'm working on it. I'm thinking about doing this weight loss surgery.
All right. Okay, hold on. All right. I want to finish the cop story.
Okay.
I got one last piece of that. Well, so I wanted to tell.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. I was going to go to. I had a lot, but we got.
Hold on. Well, let me. Okay. Okay, we got a bunch of stuff.
Fletcher, is he in jail now? He's in penitentiary?
No, fuck no. That guy dodges bullet after bullet.
Wow.
So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a quick break. I want to finish the police conversation. I want to take some calls. And maybe the health thing we'll do. I'm going to keep you over for another Adam and Drew podcast.
Okay.
So maybe we'll do it in that one. We'll see how much time we have. We'll take a break. Be right back.
Hey, you guys, it's me, Allison, from Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend. I'm sitting here with this week's guest, Art Alexakis. Art, why should they listen this week?
Well, to be honest with you, one, because you're fabulous. The whole crew here is fabulous. And secondly, you ask some really good questions. And I talk about my rage and anger, and I talk about food. We talk about potatoes. We talk about sex. I mean, come on, where do you get that?
Right.
You can't get that on the street corner. I've looked for it. No potatoes.
Come for the potatoes. Yeah. Stay for the sex. Subscribe to Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend on iTunes or go to AllisonRosen.com. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. I love you. Allison's your new best friend.
DraftKings, baby. Fantasy football. It's back. DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site. Oh, man, love me some football season. Get a piece of the $5 million. That's right, $5 million being awarded this week. You already scouted the players for the season-long team. Turn that into instant cash now. Last year, guy turned $11 into $4,000 in one weekend. Another guy won $1 million in one day. Do the math over a year. He's rich by now. DraftKings.com. Drew.
DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Use promo code Adam, and you'll get free entry into the week one $5 million kickoff bash. Enter Adam for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That is DraftKings.com.
Stamps.com. Mailing, shipping. No win, man. Go to the post office. Takes a bunch of time. Smells weird. You got to lease a postage meter. That's expensive. There's a better way. Stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage with your own computer and printer. It's like magic. Save up to 80% compared to postage meters and no trips to the post office ever again. Special offer. Enter the promo code ADS. You get a no-risk trial. $110 bonus offer. includes a digital scale. Plug it right in the computer, put your parcel on it, like magic, right out of your printer, the exact amount that it's going to cost to ship. Plus, $55 free postage. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone on the top of the homepage. Type in ADS. ADS. That's stamps.com. Promo code ADS.
We love hearing from you over here at Podcast One, so please keep sending your tweets and comments. We read every one, and don't miss the chance to take our very important listener survey at podcastone.com. Your responses will help us to make this show and all the shows the very best they can be. It only takes about 3 minutes of your time, and you'll get the instant gratification that comes with knowing you have helped out the pirate ship. You can tell us how you really feel about the show and help us get to know you better as well. Do it now. Please take the survey at podcastone.com. That, again, is podcastone.com, and keep the tweets and comments coming.
The Art of Charm. Love this podcast. These are entrepreneurs that help tens of thousands of men all over the world become extraordinary. Gary, what do you know?
I know these guys, actually. They're a couple college kids who realized they had a way with the ladies, and they like to pass that knowledge on to other dudes. So they have.
Why pass it along, man? If I was in college, that's a hypothetical, if I had a way with the ladies, another wild leap of the imagination, I would play it very close to the crop, to the vest.
As would I, but these guys are paying it forward.
Fun and educational. Personal growth doesn't have to be boring. Brings together entrepreneurs, artists, thinkers, leaders, interesting people to discuss relationships, attraction, and success. Go to theartofcharmpodcast.com or find The Art of Charm on iTunes or Stitcher and start taking things to the next level. We enjoy this show. We know you're going to enjoy it as well.
I get on the radio, this podcast. Brought to you by Edgar's Car Wash.
No Edgar's Car Wash. Welcome back to Adam and Drew Podcast with my special guest, Lavelle Crawford, who's sitting in for Adam. Adam is busy, and it's always
What's up, Adam? I'll give you a shout-out, baby. Congratulations on all the success, and hope everything works out with the litigations.
Yeah, really. I hope we'll see how that plays out. here's the thing about my thing with the cop story. This is the final chapter of that story. Right. So I wanted to tell that story on CNN, HLN, right? I was dealing with the Ferguson thing. I was like, trying to make sense of it. I was like, what the fuck is this? And I thought, you know, maybe if I tell my story, it'll create more conversation. It's always interesting. People look.
You got
at
a lot of women fans on that show. I noticed that. That's why I wasn't invited back on.
Oh no, you can come back on. But we have a lot of women guests.
Yeah, but I've watched some of your feedback. And I'm like, that don't sound, I don't know what he's talking about. I said something about Justin Bieber, man. They got pissed.
Well, we're going to have you back. We're going to start doing that show in front of an audience.
Oh, yeah?
In like a month.
That would be fun because Chelsea going off, that'd be perfect.
Yeah. So I'll bring you in that. Don't worry.
She didn't even ask me to come to that little farewell shit either.
I was asked to come to that, and I felt funny about it.
They asked you to go?
Yeah. You were having some fight with her, weren't you, or something?
I didn't have no fight. All of a sudden, I just, you know how you get fired and didn't know you were fired?
Ostracized.
Right, I was ostracized. Yeah. Talking about I was bulldozing the other comics. I said, they were fucking losers. If they can't hold their own, they shouldn't be comics. Sorry.
I can't imagine why she would do that to you. Anyway, they invited me, but I felt funny. It felt weird. I've been on the show a few times, but I'm not like a regular. I shouldn't be there.
Right.
And God
well, there's
bless
a lot of people that shouldn't be there because I'm sure.
That felt weird to me,
too. I
don't
even know Bobby Brown was on there. Bobby Brown just popped up. I think he was just dropping by.
I mean, good for Chelsea, but it seemed weird. Right. I couldn't quite get my head around it, so I thought, all right, I should bring it up.
Everybody but Lindsay Lohan.
That's right. All right, so the cop thing. So I was going to tell that story, and my immediate boss, or not my big – almost big boss. Is an African American guy.
Okay,
just a super guy.
Right,
and I sort of bounced it off.
Said about your boss.
No, he is a super guy. Thank God. Thank God. He's or I just say nothing.
Right,
and I sort of bounced it off him, and he said, "Well, I'm not sure I would do that." He said, "Here's why," and he said, "You know, what a lot of African Americans will tell you is that they're more afraid of African American cops." Because the African American cops are trying to be more blue than black, you know, more of a cop.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, and I thought, wow, we're not even hearing about that, and people aren't conversing about that. And where the fuck do we put that? So I just shut my pie hole. I didn't bring it all up because it seemed too complicated.
And it's, but you know, prime example, the movie Boys in the Hood. Remember that movie, the whole other part where the cops had the gun all in the boy's face. I mean, you got to look at it. For the main objection, listen to the title, Fraternal Order of the Police.
Yeah.
It's a fraternal order. If you're in part of their group, you're in brotherhood. Yeah. You're in a crew where, see, they take out the color if you become a cop with them.
Right.
And they put in, like, the blue. And, you know, these guys out here, they said they're risking their lives.
Yeah.
Their life is on the line all the time. And, you know, so they forget who the color they are. They become family. So they look at it, oh, you know, hey, you shouldn't be doing it. And they getting, because, see, it's easy. The bad thing about...
I like cops. Maybe I'm something wrong with me. When they mistreat me, I'm like, all right, they're
going to
tough.
No, don't get me wrong. I have some. You know, I used to be a Mason. I still am.
No shit.
And I have a lot of brothers who are cops. Mm. And I just did a show for the Ethnic Society of Police. You know, law enforcement. What do you call it? I think it's something like that. A police. And I just did a show for them, where I hosted and everything. And my whole involvement of policemen, I think that they are important. If you do it, you know, you long as you got, it's got a lot of good cops out there.
Oh my God!
You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know,
and I'm sure there's some bad ones, but it's in every profession.
It's a gang of, you know, it's a drop of bad ones, because it's like in any kind of thing,
any profession,
anything, you're gonna have some guy to make the wrong decision.
Yeah.
And that white cop, he just because he was white, don't mean he ain't going home. His wife cussing him out. He got bills. He's stressing out. Probably got diabetes or something. He ain't went to the doctor to get checked out, even though he got medical care.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of stress on him.
Yeah.
He gets kids getting picked over in school. Yeah. Anything could go on.
Yeah.
You don't know. These are human errors that go on in it. But I don't condone you pulling out a gun and killing somebody just because, you know, for whatever reason. If he unarmed, tase him, take him down.
Out here in Los Angeles, you don't see guns, right?
Right.
Lots of trouble.
Yeah.
You see dogs. Lots of dogs, right?
Yeah,
lots
helicopters.
Lots of canine, lots of helicopters, and lots of tasers.
Yeah.
But you don't see a lot of guns.
Well, I mean, it depends on where you are.
But you really think about it. I mean, you don't hear about – you hear some occasionally, but it's unusual,
right,
given the amount of crime out here.
Yeah, it's true.
They handle, and I asked some cops, and they said, well, it's expensive to do that.
Yeah, it's very – you would think it would.
And you're a little city somewhere, and you're trying to fund a police force. You forget that each little town has to fund their own goddamn
police
force.
But it's called eradication. It's because they're trying to clean the town out.
Ferguson?
Yes, that's when.
So there was something going on in that.
Yeah, it's an agenda. It's anytime, you know, when it's like old Missourians living in this town, and then it's more, they building up these, what they call reasonable housing.
Yeah.
And you got young people out there, and the thing about it is on both sides, black kids are not being taught to respect themselves and respect others like they used to
be. Was that the problem?
Some of it.
Some of it.
Some of it, because
then reality reinforces.
Yeah,
that.
But like you said, the fear that they ensue into us, oh, the police, they're gonna kill us, you know. So how do you react to, you know, how I'm supposed to react when you say, stop right there, and then he put a gun in my face for no reason.
You feel like I would fight for my life.
Yeah. And I mean, and so when it comes down to that, I've been blessed, man, that I've never had to experience that. I've had cops that were jerk-offs where my son's crying like a banshee in the back. He's worrying about my insurance card, and I'm pulling that out, and I just got my truck, and he still gave me a ticket for $500, and then California.
What?
I ran a red light or some crap. Geez. And then I was like, come on, man. Okay. And I had to get it, you know, and everybody in the car, they restless. It was crazy. You know, so they put that stress on you. But but young people, I think that they don't, it's a fighting thing where we fighting against the powers that be, and you don't know where you should be. They taking out gym out of schools. They taking out anything where you can least relieve some stress. And then here come the police bothering me because I'm walking down the street in my neighborhood in the apartment complex, and you just looking for something.
Yeah.
You got to be looking for something. Now, if it's just a routine stop, where you going? I'm going home. I live right here. Okay, let me see your license, registration. You can go. But if you mess with these kids all the time, and then never was no gun found, then you knew you messed up and you shot this kid. You know, it's just like the guy selling the single cigarettes in New York. They it's just the fear of the black man has been so over, so much propaganda behind it to the point where everybody look at us like we dangerous. You know, in some aspect that you don't know, you know, if you ain't. Because, I mean, I see little white kids are looking at me and me looking at them like, what the hell is it? You know, like they haven't been introduced to a big black man. But it's just, like I was on a plane recently. It's a balance because we got fools on each side. Because, I mean, like I said, I don't believe racism is heavier than what it is. It is what it is. I think people make their choices on racism because I was on a plane recently and it was a star-studded plane. We had Tamar and Vincent from, you know, Tamar Braxton, had Johnny Gill, had myself on the plane.
Where are you flying from?
From Atlanta. Yeah. From Knoxville to Atlanta. But I fly in Atlanta. So I know Johnny Gill. We joking and talking. But it was this guy sitting right next to me. I was going to change my seat online, but I didn't. But then I sit down and this guy, he was a jerk off. I had on a Run DMC shirt. He said, man, I got to get a picture of you. How much you weigh, man? You bought 3 bales, you know. And he's really being condescending, an asshole to me.
Well, listen, no one gets, what's the right word? Discriminated against more than heavy people.
Right, I know.
You got two strikes.
Right,
dude.
You got two. Black and fat, man. That's horrible. So it was crazy because he wanted to take a picture of me. I was like, dude, I thought he was a fan at first, but when he did that, when he said it, he said, well, you got a Run DMC shirt on. You with Run DMC? I said, no, man, this is a shirt. You can buy them in the store anytime. I said, I mean, you wear your shirt. That's your work shirt? He said, hell yeah, I drive for NASCAR. I work with NASCAR. Yeah. I said, oh, no wonder you an idiot.
Oh,
you know,
that
yeah, I said it to him. I'm not afraid because he'd already been an asshole to me. But lo and behold, I didn't know he was a jerk before I got on the plane.
Yeah, yeah.
But all of a sudden, one of the, you know, the guys with the red coat on, which he was African American, he told the guy to step outside.
Uh-oh.
And because he was in me and Johnny Gill's conversation, he's like this. We were talking about Chelsea Lazy lately, is strange enough. And he got in our conversation, and then the guy told him to come out. They kicked him off the plane.
Wow.
And I was just like, wow. I mean, that's some good. And to kind of find out, the flight attendant, she didn't like how he was acting.
Was he drinking too?
I'm assuming he was drinking because they said he was, because the guy sitting behind us said he was a little belligerent.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, well, damn, man, I felt bad. The guy got it because he made me feel bad. He said, well, I thought my wife didn't like
me. You get lots of people in trouble, man. You get your friend tased. Some drunk dude picked off a plane before the plane takes off.
You better act right around me. I got an aura, baby. I got an aura to get you in check. I get you in check.
All right, let's take a couple calls, and then we will go from there. This is Eric. Eric calling from Minnesota. What's up, Eric?
Hey, Drew. Hey, Lavelle. How you guys?
Hey, man. How are you?
Good. Hey, Lavelle. Loved you in Breaking Bad. Just want to know, are you going to be part of Better Call Saul?
I just asked him that. You weren't online when I asked him that.
Sorry,
but go, it's all right. He
it's
doesn't
all
know.
He doesn't,
we hope so.
I got a call from the...
Wait a minute. If it's a prequel and a current and a sequel,
yeah,
the current can't not include you.
No, it can't.
Right,
it can't.
Right.
But they got picked up for a second season already.
They've already
picked up for a second.
Filmed it?
Not yet.
Wow.
Not yet. So the thing, all I know, I got a call from one of the producers. She's a mega fan. Vince, them all good fans of mine. Albuquerque wants me on the show.
Right,
I'm hopefully, let's cross our fingers. I mean, if you can send an email to somebody, go ahead. But I think I'm going to be a part because me and Bob Odenkirk, we talked about it way before we even got on the last 4th season. We was talking about it. So it's going to be prevalent. I think I'll be in it.
You guys were writing the script for this?
We were trying to pick locations. We said, let's do Vegas. That'd be great in Vegas. But they brought it back to Albuquerque, which is like Vegas.
You'd love to do some trips to Vegas.
Oh, my God.
How much time did you spend in Albuquerque?
Shoot, he was down there all month. Ooh. Every day. You know, I would fly back in all month. And then Albuquerque night, they got a couple of casinos and, you know, I mean, it's
casinos, right?
Yeah, but I won almost about $8,000 over there. I did good over there. So, I mean, ain't too bad. I felt sorry for my Indian ancestors that might have not got their money. But you know, it's good. Got good golf, and it's a good place.
It's beautiful. You forget about it,
nice
it is. Yeah,
it's very nice. It's a very, very nice place, and it's laid back. They got a big Walmart.
I was only there once. I played. Somebody hired me to be Tim Allen's doctor in Roadheart. What was that motorcycle movie he did with?
Roadhogs.
Roadhogs, yeah.
Ah, yeah.
And it was so much fun. I spent the day with Tim Allen just talking about recovery and stuff. He was a great guy.
Yeah,
have
Tim,
you ever met Tim?
No, I never met him.
Anyway, Albuquerque, I was just.
That's my bad. It's called Wild Hogs.
Wild Hogs.
Oh, that's right. With John Travolta, I think Martin Lawrence.
And who played the bad guy? Help.
I forget it.
Ray Liotta?
Yeah, Ray Liotta, yeah.
All right, thank you. There it is. All right. Is my picture in there? Oh, wait. Do I show up on the
IMDb?
Let's see. Not even show up. Oh, full cast. Here we go. Hold on. Scrolling through. Come on now. Go further. You know what? Oh, there it is. I am. Doctor as Dr. Drew. Hysterical. All right, guys. Let's go back to Eric. What's going on, Eric?
Okay, so I'll try to condense it as much as possible, but basically I kind of had a falling out. Well, I had a falling out with my father last summer, and I got married about 3 months ago, and I invited him even though we had this falling out, but it turns out he kind of spent the wedding telling all my relatives that it was my fault that we, you know, had a falling out. And so we just found this out not
too long ago. Hold on. What was the falling out over? I understand.
Well, I spent the summer up at my dad's house working, and my stepmom, his wife, and I never really agreed. Plus, they're both alcoholics, so I kind of called them out on that. And she overreacted and said I was calling her mentally disabled and this kind of stuff. And they said, well, we want you out of here, and, you know, we don't want to see you and this and that. And I still, you know, and my wife and I, you know, we still invited them to our wedding, and they came. But we just found out, like I said, from some relatives that basically they were kind of bad-mouthing us the whole time. And I love my father, and he's always kind of been this way, kind of a jerk, I guess. But I don't know if it's worth me to try to give him a call again and say, hey, you know, let's try to figure this out, or if I should just let it go.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions. I mean, digging this up. Was your wedding? Did your wedding have an open bar?
Yeah.
Well, it had free beer, hard liquor you had to pay for. Yeah.
Well, they shouldn't have been really complaining since they drank a lot. But but on the same aspect, being that it'd be that's your stepfather, that's your father, she's your stepmother. You give your step-parents a lot of respect, but, you know, your father, it's good to still have a relationship with him. You know, he can find a way. I'm going to tell you something. Me and my father hadn't spoken almost 40 years. He left my mother. We went around. He came back in my life after 40 years. I found out he was homosexual. Things, you know, kind of was weird. Matter of fact, his lover passed away just a year ago.
Oh, my.
And we came... We stay in touch. It ain't like it should be, but at least we have that olive branch where, you know, I love my dad and I ain't gonna never let him not be in my life.
I bet you, couldn't you be empathic towards him too? It's like, oh, was he married your mom?
Yeah.
So he marries this woman, but he's gay. How bad for him?
Well, I don't know if he was gay then.
Well,
but
of course he was gay then.
He might have been.
He was trying not to be.
Well, he made three kids, so he sure tough through it. My mom was hot, though.
We'll see.
I guess he was.
That bit through everything.
Doesn't matter what you're into as a male. I wonder if my mom, did you hear him like, all three babies.
It's hard to fake.
We could have had a triplet at one time.
How dare you guys. But listen, a lot of guys. It's a very sad story when they do that, and they're hiding that, or they're suppressing it and stuff.
And I think I told my mom, I said it was the best thing that he left.
Oh yeah,
because it really would have complicated things. Because you think about how many people would have looked at you crazy, you know, that pretty woman like that. My mom was gorgeous, so I mean, she still is a beautiful lady. So for her to have to suffer through, you know, that's all she can meet is a gay man. You know, I mean, that would be unfair.
It'd be miserable for everybody.
Yeah, and me, you know, me, my gay dad, and my football games and stuff. That's why he can't tackle. He's got Lily in his blood.
So Eric, the bottom line here is we sort of think that you want to find a way to extend the olive branch, but I'm still a little unclear what's going on right now. I understand that
well, it kind of goes. I have this need for validation, like you know, like I got into law school recently, and the first thing I wanted to do was call my dad and be like, "Hey, I got into law school," or you know, I get an A on something. I say, "Hey, I get an A." Kind of this have this need, and I think part of me just wants to fulfill that need.
Well, try it. You know? See what happens. It may not work. I know when I was growing up, I didn't get any approval for anything. Do you get that?
Nah, yeah, I mean, that's just dad.
My thing was always like, well, what's next?
Right,
was
like, right. Well, you know what you got to do now.
Yeah.
You got to keep your mind on the books.
Yeah.
And the thing about it, I think what you should do, man, drop a letter every once in a while, give them a phone call. Just keep the door open.
Yeah, yeah. I don't show up, but nah. I mean, just you reach out a little bit. I think
no, don't come in there where you're uncomfortable. I'm here. Me and my wife are here. This is your grand. Now, are you blessed to have grandchildren? You have children yet?
I have a daughter from a previous marriage. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so you had that. I think that they just keep in the relationship with them.
Lavelle's point is that grandkids equalize everything.
Sure.
That's because then you get grandparents going on.
Yeah.
Everything gets forgiven by everybody.
Yeah. Everybody calms down.
Yeah.
And I'll say part of the issue last summer too was when we left. He said, "Well, you know, you and your wife, we're not." They basically said, "We don't like you guys, but you can bring your granddaughter around anytime," which.
Well,
kind of really pissed me off.
Well, he doesn't like the wife. Is that the deal? He doesn't like both of you.
He doesn't. Well, they don't really. I guess they don't approve of our lifestyle, whatever that means. They're very conservative.
What does that mean? You left a piece of the story out. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, they're very paranoid people. They're very like conservative, strict.
What's your lifestyle? What is your lifestyle? They're complaining about.
We're a little more loose. I'm not saying that. I guess I'm more of like a Democrat to their Republican, if you want to call it that.
That's not a lifestyle.
What's wrong with you? What's the difference? What's your lady's ethnicity is different?
No, but she does have, actually, yeah, part of her family is Hispanic. And, actually, and funny thing, part of the issue was is they correlated them to a bunch of prostitutes. They said, they basically said that her family was a bunch of prostitutes. It was a really bad follow-up.
Listen. So here's the deal. You don't have to fully forgive him. You can stay angry if you want, but you have to sort of holding resentments and grudges. Just it's not going to be good for you or anybody.
You can fully forgive him, but just don't forget.
I
think you should take the high road.
Right.
I think I'm not an expert on it by no means, but I think that. When it comes down to your parents, you don't want to lose that part of you.
The way I was describing this to Adam the other day is the way you got to do it is you got to think to yourself, what do I need to do to be a good son for myself?
Exactly.
Not for him, for me. To do what's right, to be the good son, and to rise above this bullshit.
Right. And just think about what you need to do to get in heaven. If you did all you can and it comes out that, he's still the jerk. That's on him.
That's on him.
You know, it's just like if you had a real crappy relationship with your mother, it's the same thing. Just, that you don't want to be them. That's the whole thing.
All right, Russell, what's up? 42, Virginia.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you very much for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm 6 months in recovery.
Yeah.
I got divorced about 6 months ago and left my wife to get sober. I married an old drinking buddy.
She's sober.
Recently,
I got it. Okay.
Yeah, I left her to pursue sobriety.
Okay.
I had had a previous experience before in sobriety. I had 18 months, but I didn't do any steps, and I drank again for 10 more years.
Shocking.
So now I've recently started dating somebody.
Yeah.
And I haven't had sober sex in 10 or 12 years.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of anxiety about it, and also I find that I can't last at all.
All right, a couple things.
And
all right, hold on. Was alcohol your only drug?
Well, the only one that I really need recovery for. I used coke and meth and things like that every now and then, but always just kind of.
Okay.
No, I haven't used that in years.
Okay, so here's the deal. First of all, one of the paramount rules of your first year of sobriety is no new relationships for 12 months, right? So whatever these dating relationships are, they are just sort of recreation pastime because nothing will take you out faster and harder than a relationship. That's why you got to you're very fragile during those first 12 months, right?
Yeah, so I understand that. I've had long talks with my sponsor, had long talks with her sponsor.
Okay. How long has she been sober?
She just celebrated 2 years.
All right. And so, you just don't get involved. That's number one. And that's fine. If you just want to date and have a good time, that's okay. But you see how even doing that creates all kinds of heavy feelings, all kinds of unanticipated reactions. And having very bizarre and peculiar changes in your sexuality, sexual performance, libido is routine in the first couple years of sobriety, really. Yeah. Sometimes people have no libido for a while. Sometimes they have excessive libido. Their performance goes both ways. They can't ejaculate. They ejaculate too fast. They're all over the place.
You got to always remember also, when you was with your drinking buddy, were y'all very sexual?
We honestly, my ex-wife and I, we hadn't had sex in the last year of our marriage.
Yeah, didn't have sex in the last year? Okay. Well, you know, I know that sometimes, like, I agree with Dr. Drew, no sexual activity for a minute. So you can really clean out your system of your memories, too. Because sex sometimes is memory.
Triggering. And you start remembering.
Yeah, you make, especially for men, because we always, man, I remember that one chick that did that one thing that was just incredible that I want to do again.
And then if you get high, there's a euphoric recall, want to drink. And
Sure, because you don't want that to trigger back to the stuff that you got off on. And that, and sometimes, you know, I know that I, back in the day, you know, I used to, you know, smoke a little bit and I drink, and then, you know, that would make me more comfortable with women, you know, like to just, you know, go and do some freaky dicky, you know, things that I won't put on video, you know. But now that I've got older, you know, like with my lovely wife, you know, it's cool. Like now I told her, I said, I'm more in love with you now because I have sexual dreams about you.
Right. You're close.
And that's hot.
Yeah.
It's hot when you have sexual dreams about your wife.
Yeah.
There used to be, you know, a couple of other esteemed actresses out there that, you know, and she wasn't in the dream. And I felt bad. Like, you know, I'm sorry, Miss Holly Berry, you can't be in
this.
You
gotta get out of here.
My wife gonna kill us in this dream. But I think that, you know, taking a break, you know, will clear your head, because I think what you're doing right now is trying to balance off you're clean and sober and you're trying to stay there. Yeah. So the sexual thing is just really it's conflicting, because you just, I'm sure, like, I stopped smoking weed. I swear to you, man, they say weed ain't habitual, but man, when I get stressed, I get angry, I be wanting to pull up into a medical marijuana store and buy me a nice little bag and puff away, you know. But then I be like, well, my son, and I look at him and he's my push to watch it. And then, you know, my health, I'm just want to keep breathing. Yeah. And I was having a problem breathing. That's why I stopped. So in that retrospect, I think, you know, take your time.
It affects your performance and stuff too, right? Yeah. Sure, you're better.
No, I got rock hard. I got that. I'm part about a bull.
I mean, in terms of like your career.
Oh, being in this entertainment field. Yeah, you have to be on point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of times these agents, managers, they love dealing with druggies. For real. They're not putting them down like that, but they love dealing with somebody that smoke. Like, here's one of his clients, Cheech and Chong, and see some of the things that he do. Oh, I got you this. And you just like, oh, cool. Let's celebrate. Right. Smoke it up.
Right.
And see, me, I have to come back out of that, say, no, I'm not smoking until I get all mine.
Yeah.
And when I get all mine, and my son's 12,
then
I'm smoking. I'm going to get back
12,
to
him. Why 12?
Well,
he's really going to start emulating.
No, he ain't going to smoke. I can whoop his ass then, but 3, you can't punch him in the chest.
I see.
You can't 3, you're like, no, but he ain't going to want to smoke it then. But, you know, I think I made it through the hard times where I didn't built the respect in him by 12.
That's good.
I think so.
That's good. 12 is important age.
Yeah. Cause
all right. Here's the deal. Russell, you heard us. We're saying it's risky even to be having sexual relationships or any kind of relationship in that first 12 months. You can go on doing it, but your question was, is it normal to have anxiety and all these feelings? Yes, it's normal. It's routine in those first early periods of sobriety. It's not going to get better. It's probably going to get worse. So you may want to really think about whether you want to keep putting yourself in this situation. You're very fragile in those 12 months. And this is a highly evocative and vulnerable situation to be sexual with somebody. So be careful. I got to wrap it up. Lavelle, here's the deal. Next time, we're going to hear more about Freaky Deaky. All right? Hear more about Freaky Deaky. We're going to talk about your health. And I want to talk a little bit about Willie Lynch, something you made me read about last time I was in here. I read a little bit about that. So we'll get all that. Lavelle will stay with me one more, Adam and Drew, and then presumably I'll be back at some point in this podcast. And until then, this is Dr. Drew on behalf of Adam Carolla and Lavelle Crawford saying mahalo.
is Corolla Digital.